The overall impression of the shopping mall convention in Midtown Manhattan is really clear and, frankly, not very surprising. People in the shopping mall business see you and me as little units of consumption to be counted, manipulated, tweaked by the latest advances in technology. The reason everyone's here is to do one thing, to maximize revenue per square inch of mall. There are all these displays for mall developers, mall retailers, mall restaurants, software providers selling the latest tools to figure out how exactly to get the most possible money out of the pockets of the people walking through the mall. Then I turn a corner and suddenly I'm talking to Paul Fetcher.
We got sidetracked after World War II when we started going out to Long Island, plowing down the potato fields and popping up modular housing. We lost it there. Then we had to go all of a sudden in the 50s and 60s to the enclosed regional mall, which became the most exciting environment.
Paul's buddy, John Sacon, jumps in.
We've built office parks. We have parking. There's no walking around an office park. You get in your car, you go someplace. Our urban centers have taken away from what is necessary to make them vibrant.
So who are these two anti-mall radicals standing in the middle of the shopping mall convention? They're not plants from City College, I swear. They're advocates of what they call lifestyle malls. Open air, strollable, centers of community. It reminds me of this class I took about ancient Greece and Rome, where the marketplace at the center of a city was more than just a place to buy stuff. It was a true gathering place where you'd hear lively debates about the duties of citizens or the nature of man or of war or whatever. You know, you'd see a play by Aeschylus, and Aeschylus would be there, and then you'd go watch Socrates give some speech that would piss everyone off.
The new movement in the United States to go to a lifestyle village, which is a destination, because there they can commune with their neighbors, something that we've gotten away from.
I believe the Greek word is an agora.
Exactly. Well, there's nothing new that we're doing that the Romans didn't do 2,000 years ago.
In the Agora. Now, before I get all excited about these malls representing the rebirth of Athenian democracy, it's worth pointing out exactly what Paul and John have in mind. John Sacon is developing what he calls a lifestyle village in Glastonbury, Connecticut. And when he shows me the plans, it seems more like a high-end strip mall with a walking path than an ancient civic center. That's in fact why he's talking to Paul Fetcher. Paul Fetcher runs Great American Brokerage. He's an expert in figuring out which restaurants would do best in different kinds of malls.
Now, Paul, in a center like this, would you say I would need two white napkin, two
I would say lunch? One white tablecloth. I need more than one lunch operation.
Okay.
One may be full service, one may be fast casual. A fast casual like a Panera Bread.
Oh man, these guys go on and on about dining concepts. Nothing's a restaurant, everything's a dining concept. They talk about which dining concept would attract the right kind of people who will spend a lot of money in the right retail concept. In other words, they don't give a darn about Aeschylus and Socrates. They just want to make some money.
Agoras did not have broker consultants. They did not have square foot.
We don't know that. I think actually they may have.
Actually, I do have specific knowledge on that. If I go to Rome and I go across the street from Circus
Turns Maximus, out Paul has done his research. He visited the ruins of an ancient three-story mall in Rome. He says that back then, the mall managers did indeed, just like now, study how much each shop made. They'd move the best sellers down to ground level, and that's exactly what a modern mall developer does, to get more revenue per square foot.
So while we think we're clever with percentage sales, that too goes back 3,000 years.
I can't decide if it's depressing or actually kind of wonderful to realize that our ancient ancestors were so much like us. Sure, some debated democracy and some even gave their lives for their ideals. But a lot of others, just like us, focused on making a buck, or in their case, making a drachma. Adam Davidson, NPR News.